From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Michael Montgomery, in for Al Letson. When Vladimir Putin ordered the full-scale invasion of Ukraine 2 years ago, Russia was expecting to capture the capital, Kyiv, and swiftly dominate the rest of the country. So when Russian soldiers were given orders to attack, they were told to expect a victory parade in Kyiv's Maidan Square. But that's not what they got, as this soldier says in a cell phone call.
I wish this with Ukraine were over and we could come back, because this is all up. I can't put it in any other words. I just look around every corner. So many civilians are against us.
This audio is from a batch of phone calls that Russian soldiers made to friends and family during the first weeks of the invasion. The calls were secretly intercepted, and around 2,000 of those intercepts were obtained by Erica Kienitz. Erica's an investigative reporter with the Associated Press. Erica, so you've spent the past year exposing evidence of possible war crimes in Ukraine. Why are these cell phone calls so important?
These recordings reveal a lot about what went wrong for Russia, and they show what the war looked like through the eyes of Russian soldiers themselves. Nothing turned out as expected for these guys. And we can hear how in war, some of them went from their lives as husbands, sons, fathers, to talking about killing civilians. But they talk about other things too. Love, their dreams, when they last took a shower. Rising prices in Russia, money is an overriding concern.
I gather you got these intercepted calls from a source in the Ukrainian government.
That's right, I did. And we verified them with the help of the Dossier Center. That's an investigative group in London funded by a Russian dissident named Mikhail Khodorkovsky. We made sure the phone numbers were real and also corroborated details from the calls, like military units and their positions, with other evidence that we'd gathered during our reporting.
You decided to focus on two young men. Tell us their story. Where does it begin?
Let's go back to the day Putin launches the invasion, and we'll start with the first soldier. His name is Ivan. He's part of an elite airborne unit. These guys are in Belarus on the border, but they have no idea they're about to invade Ukraine.
Hello.
Ivan is on a call with his mom, talking about that day. And like all these calls, voice actors are speaking in English over the original Russian audio. We're just using the soldiers' first names to protect the identities of their families in Russia.
They came and read us a message on Telegram. Tomorrow you are leaving for Ukraine. There is a genocide of the Russian population, and we have to stop it.
Ivan's mother also had no idea Russia was going to war. She said she stopped speaking, stopped sleeping, and was basically in a state of hysteria for days when she discovered her son was fighting in Ukraine. I really wanted to know more about these young men. So we looked at public records and social media to understand who they are and where they came from. Ivan is from a rural area of Russia, and he and his dad talk about the family farm, selling the cow, buying pigs. He loves horses. Ivan dreamed of being a soldier from the time he was a kid. I've seen family photos of him that show him as a 12-year-old in the woods, dressed in camouflage for a paintball game. He's holding a large airsoft rifle. In one of the pictures, there's a mark on his chest, this slimy splotch of green that means certain death in paintball.
So Ivan sees himself as a professional soldier, and as the calls progress, it sounds like his mother gets over her initial shock of him going into combat.
She does. His mom is a real supporter of this war, super patriotic. We learn that the family has relatives in Kyiv, but his mom several times vows to go fight in Ukraine herself. She says she'll volunteer, she'll be a nurse, she'll go beat people with a shovel if she has to. It seems like she's taken in a lot of the Russian propaganda about Ukraine, that it's filled with Nazis and her son is there to defeat them and liberate the population. At one point, Ivan tells her he'll kill people if he has to. And she says, I understand. I love you so much, and I'm so proud of you. I don't even have the words to describe it. And she tells him God is with him.
There's a second soldier, and it sounds like his story is different from Ivan's.
His name is Leonid. He joined the military because he needed money. He was in debt, didn't want to depend on his parents. And over the course of his calls, we can hear about terrible things that he's seen, what it takes for him to survive, how there's no room for mercy. In this call to his mother, he talks about that very first day of the invasion and how he was told they'd take Kyiv without even firing a bullet, and the whole thing would be over in a week. Instead, they get in a firefight right as they cross into Ukraine.
We shot from the tanks, machine guns, and rifles. We had no losses. We destroyed their four tanks, so we won.
As he goes on, he seems to show some empathy for the young Ukrainian soldiers they've just killed.
They were lying out there, just 18 or 19 years old. Am I different from them? No, I'm not.
This is hard for Leonid's mom to hear. She says, what a nightmare, Leonid. And she asks her son, you wanted to live at that moment, right, honey? And Leonid says, more than ever. Leonid and Ivan's unit moved from Belarus down the western flank of the Dnipro River. They were still a long way from Kyiv. I later talked with Ukrainian civilians, locals who'd followed all this from a tiny village north of the capital, bucolic place that became a major forward operating base for the Russians. The Ukrainians, this one mom in particular, she'd peek over her fence and see these boyish soldiers, some of them not much bigger than their guns, on top of their tanks, heading south, shouting, "Now we'll take Kyiv. Kyiv is ours." This triumphant mood does not last long at all. Those tanks start coming back wrecked if they come back at all, and the soldiers return wounded if they return at all. And in the phone calls, you can also hear the mood darkening. This is Leonid talking with his mom. She's calling him by his nickname, and he's describing to her how he had to collect the bodies of dead Russian soldiers. I want to add that his description is pretty graphic.
I have personally seen 12 blown-up tanks all in a line. It was terrible. There was a body without legs, arms, or a head, with nothing. We wrapped it up in a blanket.
The Russians are taking far more casualties than anyone expected, and they're doing their best to hide it from the public. They're also running short on basic supplies. So one way for soldiers to get what they needed or wanted was to steal. A lot of these guys didn't have a lot of money, and suddenly they can just take stuff that would normally have been out of reach. This is Ivan talking about it with his mom.
Hear me out. We have 100% discounts here. We go in and nobody says anything at the cash register. You walk into a store and you can take anything you want. There's just no meat or bread.
This is something that Leonid also talks about with his mother. And she's like, you guys aren't looting, are you? But it's become normal for him.
Look, Mom, I'm seeing tons of houses. I don't know, dozens, hundreds. And they are all empty. Everyone ran away. We take food, bed linen, pillows, blankets, forks, spoons, pans.
And when he tells her about it so casually, she laughs like, you gotta be kidding me. Now, we know the scale of this looting was much more extensive. In the intercepts, we can hear other soldiers gleefully describe piles of gold and electronics that they've made off with. Some of these guys seem proud that they can come home and give their families something.
There's another thing the soldiers talk about stealing, and it's Ukrainian cell phones.
And this has real importance for Ukraine's ability to defend itself. The government and military were doing very clever signals intelligence. So if they pick up a bunch of Russian numbers clustered in one place, they can figure out where the enemy troops are and attack them. So the Russians eventually wise up to this and ditch their Russian phones, but they just can't give up that itch to stay connected. So they take those stolen Ukrainian phones, pass them around, and a bunch of guys call home from one number. Of course, the Ukrainians were still listening, and they intercepted those calls whenever they ping a Ukrainian cell tower. These conversations provided really important intelligence to the armed forces of Ukraine. And now they're also potential evidence for war crimes prosecutors.
So the Ukrainians were able to listen in on Russian soldiers' phone calls, like we're doing right now, but in real time, as the Russians were trying to capture Kyiv.
That's right. Ukraine had teams of people monitoring and logging these calls. And believe it or not, this is still going on. Russian soldiers in eastern Ukraine keep talking on cell phones, and the Ukrainians keep listening in. And conditions haven't gotten better. They've gotten worse. By mid-March, the Russian advance is bogged down on the outskirts of Kyiv. Leonid and Ivan's unit is stuck around the town of Bucha, trying to reach the capital. We know this from evidence Russian soldiers left behind that we analyzed, the locations of cell phone towers they were calling from, and it's what Ivan tells his mom. She says she's afraid to ask him where he is because people might be listening in. But Ivan says he doesn't care.
Bucha. Russian soldiers occupied the town for weeks. It's now synonymous with some of the worst atrocities of the war.
They took him away. I held onto them. I begged them. I was on my knees.
That's next on Revealed.